I don't think people realize that they're spending 98-99% of their lives inside, mostly in front of screens. But once they start measuring that and they realize how little time they're actually spending outdoors, that may change.
Welcome to this episode of the Innovation Day podcast, brought to you by Brightworks. I'm your host, Neil Follett. I'm sure you've heard the saying, what's old is new again. And today's episode is a bit of a technology-driven twist on that saying. The old part of today's episode is the concept that being outside is good for you. It's a fact, and a quick search will reveal thousands of articles and papers backing it up. What's new is that Jared Hanley and his team at NatureQuant have built a platform that puts machine learning and AI to work in order to give us hard data on both nature and the benefits it can provide. This is tracking, but it's tracking for good, helping the public and private sector focus on areas of need when it comes to their attention and their investment, and also helping individuals track their exposure to nature. At the heart of it, it's a simple concept, but it's one that's far from simple to execute when you're talking about mapping entire continents. Jared, I've been actually really excited about this conversation since we first spoke. I have a million questions, but first I will say thank you for taking the time out on a Monday to join me for an hour or so.
Oh, happy to do it. I love talking about this stuff.
Why don't we start with what is NatureQuant? I would say, you know, based on my conversation and some of the stuff that you've sent me and reading it, it feels like NatureQuant is essentially a platform that can spawn multiple products, but maybe given you're the co-founder, you should put it in your words.
Well, I mean, as the name implies, at its core, we are quantifying nature. And we're doing that through, you know, various forms of technology, quantifying the type of nature, the quantity of nature, and then ultimately how those elements are affecting our lives and our environments.
And you are doing that through, and we're going to get into it, a bunch of data sources, some machine learning, other technologies, some proprietary components that you've put together. But how is that manifesting itself in terms of a product or a solution in the marketplace? What does NatureQuant look like if someone is going to interact with it at this point in time, appreciating that this point in time may still be a little bit early?
Yeah. Well, let me break it down by two different main, I'd call them product suites. The first is what we call NatureScore. And what a NatureScore is, again, as I said, the measurement of the quantity and quality of nature for a static location. So say you gave me your home address and I wanted to understand what kind of nature was there. NatureScore could draw a radius around your house and then examine all the elements within that radius, score it, and then deliver back to you a number that is optimized to predict an outcome. So say you wanted to know, like, what are cancer rate risks like in type of environment? We can calculate the elements of nature within that radius of your home that seem to be predictive of cancer rates, for example. So that's NatureScore, and that can be done, you know, not only at like a spot location, like I mentioned, like an address, but it can be done by a neighborhood, citywide, or even like, you know, broader regions. If you want to understand, you know, how is that forest to the east of me influencing the air quality, for example, those kinds of technical analysis can be done with our data. So that's NatureScore. The next product, which is quite new, is NatureDose. And so if you think about, if we've mapped all of the natural elements so far in the US down to every 10 meters, but we're scoring Canada and the EU right now as well, and then we know how you move about throughout the course of your life, we know what environments you've been in and how much nature exposure you individually have interacted with. And that's important for us to understand how your environment's influencing your health, your type of lifestyle that you're engaging in, and then also, you know, set goals, what we call a nature dose or a nature prescription for the amount of time you should strive to spend outside each week.
And I just want to go back for one second, because you said it really quickly. You have mapped the US, like the entire continental US, down to 10 square meters. Mm-hmm. Like every 10 meters of the US, you've mapped for a variety of these data points, be it the environmental factors, pollution, nature, et cetera.
That's correct. I mean, not every remote sensing technology that we've aggregated has that level of granularity. Some of it is 30 meter grid, but a lot of it is that precise. And so, you know, I guess maybe to just dive into a little more detail on how the NatureScore is constructed is we've aggregated many, many remote sensing technologies. If you think about satellite imagery as kind of one of the main ones, and then you run a computer vision process over it, we can decipher what elements are where in a very kind of precise manner. And then there's also all kinds of GIS data sets that tell you where the roads are, where the building footprints are, where the parks are, where the trees are, where the bodies of water are, where is there light pollution or air pollution or noise pollution. And all of these mapping elements can get aggregated into our master data set. Think of it like the, you know, Google Maps of nature, if you will. And then we can, you know, draw a circle around any location or look at a polygon and examine what's inside that area with a high level of intelligence.
I'm just going to pause for a second, and I'm going to ask you to go back a little bit and help me understand what was your journey to get here, because there's so much in NatureScore, NatureDose, and NatureQuant that we could take up the entire time. But I'm really interested to understand what was the path for you that led you to being the co-founder of this company.
Well, there's a lot of pieces there. I mean, because it is really just a passion of mine, but also I think it was the confluence of a lot of other factors that I'll quickly touch upon. So I think, like many of us, you know, I've had a kind of a high stress, high tech, you know, professional career where I was in front of screens and, you know, just going nonstop. And I had always found that, like, kind of the greatest tool at my disposal to just reset my head, get, you know, kind of a clear head again, and then also just personally to feel better physically and sleep better was going outside. You know, often I'd be hiking or biking or exercise, but it just gave me just like an amazing health benefit, both mentally and physically. And I didn't get that when I was in the gym, like running on a treadmill or, you know, relaxing on my couch. I really only got it when I was outside. And I thought that was kind of unique. And so, you know, being a curious guy, I started diving into the scientific literature around what happens when you're exposed to nature. And it turns out there is just a mountain of research on these very clear connections between time exposed to nature and positive mental and physical health outcomes. So that was kind of where I was personally. And then also what started happening was the quantified self movement, A, and then B, cryptocurrencies and things like Bitcoin that really had no intrinsic value, but had a number. And when you apply a number to something, people start measuring it, tracking it, and ascribing value to it. And in my mind, I felt like nature needed a number. It didn't have a number. And I think all the benefits that nature was providing us, you know, health and otherwise, I mean, it cleans the air. It, you know, can provide like a wind barrier, a sound barrier. I mean, there's a ton of benefits that nature is providing us that just aren't really being appreciated or calculated precisely enough, largely because nature didn't have a number. So I felt like one great way to study these health impacts with more granularity, A, but B, also get society to appreciate these benefits that nature is providing is to just simply give it a number.
And you say simply, but like, This is not a simple, like, I'm just giving nature a number. Maybe give me a bit of sense of your background or some of the folks in the team, because, I mean, we are talking about some pretty serious big data crunching here to come up with a number and come up with a number that's, you know, defensible, kind of both on the nature score and on the nature dose. It's going to have to survive some scrutiny. Mm-hmm. What was the process to get to, okay, this is how we're going to define the number? Because one of the senses I get is that there's this sort of like aggregation of some existing data, potentially collection of maybe some proprietary data, and then there's the interpretation or analysis. So this isn't a, yep, you know, you and your team found some data set that nobody had. Like, you're actually working, it sounds like, with a lot of probably kind of like local government, regional data sets and things like that.
Yes.
But you're bringing them together in a unique way. Like, what was the process to go, okay, here's how we're going to, you know, come up with a number?
Yeah. Well, first on the team, you know, my background is largely in data science and a little bit in machine learning, but mostly applied to the world of finance. The two other co-founders, one is kind of a tech wizard who is, you know, launched a bunch of technology companies and sold them. And the third is a professor, kind of the director of human physiology at the University of Oregon, who has spent a lifetime studying how our environments impact our physiology. So we kind of had a data science guy, a tech guy, and a basically a doctor on the founding team, and we all felt like we could bring these unique skill sets into analyzing how nature exposure is broadly influencing our health. That really was the first goal, to just look at the connection between nature and health. And so what we did is we aggregated all of these, you know, remote sensing technologies and data sets, including some proprietary ones that we created, and said, well, how do you combine all these things to, you know, properly weight them? I mean, so there's trees in this neighborhood, there's a park over there, there's a lake or a river somewhere else. If we want to consolidate this into a simple digestible number, we need a fair way to weight those elements. And so what we decided to do was run a machine learning process between all of those natural elements and longevity by location. So if you take individuals or communities and you know what kind of environments they live in and the prevalence of certain health outcomes, particularly longevity, you can optimize the weighting of those elements to be most predictive or most tightly associated with good health. And so that's what we did, is we took our giant data set of natural elements on one hand and population longevity by location on the other, ran a machine learning process between the two, and it bubbles into a nature score, which is our primary nature score for health. And we thought that that was the most kind of defensible, independent way to aggregate all those natural elements into a single score. And it has since been used and validated repeatedly by other researchers. And we work with a number of universities delivering them our data, and they run it against other what are called covariates or confounding factors to really parse apart, are we seeing these health outcomes because of the nature or other elements of that community, which may also be influencing health outcomes. And we're going to keep doing this and keep optimizing it. So it's not like a static thing. It's something that's going to get better and better over time.
Just on a personal level, how much more excited are you to wake up in the morning and be doing this than applying your skills in the finance field?
Oh, man. It's awesome. It's just so exciting. I mean, backing up, what I would say is happening, not just with our technology, but broadly, I think in the world of healthcare, is this appreciation for environmental and social determinants of health. I mean, the reality is most of our health outcomes are based on our lifestyle and our environment, not so much, you know, our doctor, and definitely not our DNA. Actually, there's been a bunch of studies showing that about 80% of our health outcomes is based on lifestyle and environment. Only 20% is really just based on your genes, if you will. And so we have tremendous control over public health and individual health if we start to understand and appreciate those elements of lifestyle and environment that, you know, just bestow health. And so this world is booming, and I think we've got, you know, some great intelligence now around one very important aspect of our environment, which is nature. And so I'm really excited to see where it goes.
And when you guys started, I appreciate that there are products that are now bubbling up and going live, and there's a monetization strategy, I'm sure. Was this driven in some way off of what you guys, you and your founders, you and the other folks on the team, identified as a business need? Or did you sort of say, if we build it, if we come up with the number, there will be a business case that follows? So yeah. What were some of the driving factors in the early days to say, I think when we come up with this number, here's the sector, the company, the industry, the vertical that we're going to approach first?
Yeah, I would say curiosity and just appreciation for how impactful nature can be on health that the public was not aware of was step one. I mean, we had been through the scientific literature. We had run some internal kind of what are called regression analysis between our data and health outcomes. And it was very clear that the associations were profound. I mean, you could look at some studies and come to the conclusion that, you know, basically being exposed to nature can be as impactful as things like diet and exercise. But no one talks about it or thinks about it or is just broadly aware of it. So we wanted to make sure that this valuable health intervention became common knowledge. And so once that could occur, and we understand it still is going to take a lot of education, we wanted to then supply the technology to allow people to leverage nature as a health tool in the most, you know, profound way. So I wouldn't say that the business case really drove the establishment of the company first. I think it was what we felt was a unique knowledge around what is becoming more scientifically understood, but just not publicly known.
My question was maybe posed a little bit more from a mercenary standpoint than I intended it, but it's a good altruistic place to start.
Yeah.
So you know, where are we today? We went back a little bit, talked about kind of where you started and some of the early work on the data. Maybe give me a sense of where things are today and where are you starting to see this intersection between the information, the scores that you have, and sort of interest broadly? Like, where is that intersection starting to happen outside of maybe the scientific community? Because it sounds like you've got a lot of universities and folks that are, you know, interested in this data, but are you starting to see outside of the kind of university sector some interest?
Yeah. So let's first talk about Nature Score, which again, sure, you can just think about that as like mapping data. So another area where nature has a huge influence, but it hadn't been incorporated historically, at least in a statistical way, is real estate. So, you know, having nice mature trees in front of your house or being within 200 meters of a nice park or certainly being close to bodies of water has a pretty profound influence on real estate values. But a lot of that data hadn't been pulled into valuation models historically. So, you know, if you go to Zillow, for example, and get a Zestimate for your house, that Zestimate actually doesn't know if you're close to a nice park or if there's really mature trees in front of your house. But we now can calculate all those things in a really nuanced way. So we can more accurately predict how a home will be valued based on those aesthetic factors or kind of neighborhood factors that had been lost historically. So that's one arena where our data, surprisingly, is really turning out to be quite appealing and attractive. ESG investment is another one. So most banks now want to track where their money is going and how much of their investments are going into neighborhoods of high need. Mm-hmm. Particularly in the U.S., environmental justice is a really important factor right now, where they have identified that a lot of neighborhoods are nature deficient and they want to correct for that. And so we can supply data to help both investors and governments understand which neighborhoods are nature deficient and basically need more attention to correct that.
So let's pause on that for one sec, because I think that you're probably on a bit of a roll, and I hate to interrupt you, but this is one of those pieces that as I've been listening to you and sort of thinking about the real world applications, in one of your pieces of literature, it said, you know, families of color and or low income are disproportionately nature deprived. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of a sense of, you know, rich people get green space and lower income people don't. And also there's low income neighborhoods that it would be very hard to actually find green space. How does your data or your platform help address that, which seems like a very fundamental, like systemic built environment issue that you wouldn't even necessarily need data to show? You just need to go to a low income neighborhood and try to find a park or some green space. Like how are you guys helping to move the needle as local governments, state level governments are starting to try to address this?
Yeah, it's a really hard and complicated issue. But what we can do is provide, you know, precise intelligence around where the nature is, where it isn't, A, and B, the potential health impacts that lack of nature might be having on the people that live in that community, to raise awareness around the importance of green infrastructure broadly within those neighborhoods. And so it's always going to take kind of a local cohort to understand the best way to improve that environment, as well as the local government. Mm-hmm. We just provide intelligence around, you know, where the nature is and what kind of influence might it be having on public health, potentially on air quality. We've looked at urban heat islands because nature is one of the best ways to combat urban heat islands. All of those kind of elements within that environment really are related to nature in a meaningful way. And we can help communities understand that and then also predict what are the best interventions to improve urban heat islands or improve air quality or improve asthma rates within a community.
Well, I guess it starts to get interesting even just from an economics level, because you're starting to look at, if we can actually have this impact on health outcomes, that will reduce pressure on the healthcare system, healthcare costs, and the investment to deliver better health outcomes can be quantified as well in a certain neighborhood by greening that neighborhood in a specific way.
We have done exactly that, as have a few other insurers are now looking at this. Kaiser has conducted a study looking at basically the cost of an individual to their healthcare system relative to the amount of green where they live. And it's quite clear, even after you account for, again, covariates and confounding factors, the greener it is where you live, the cheaper you are to insure, because you just don't see the doctors off. You're just generally healthier. And so insurance companies are starting to become more and more aware of that. And I think because of that, they may start valuing, green infrastructure, or valuing promoting that their members get outside, which is kind of leading to the next product that we have, which is the mobile app, Nature Dose.
Excellent segue.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about Nature Dose, because that's something I think that listeners can understand, because it's in the palm of their hand, and it in some ways a little bit gamifies getting outside, right?
Yeah, it's really consumer facing for sure. So Nature Dose is an app that automates what you would think of as a nature prescription, or if you think about like the 10,000 step count that became very popular, it's a way to create a goal and track your progress towards that goal. And in this case, the goal is to spend a certain amount of time outside each week. And when you are outside, trying to get adequate amount of nature exposure. And so the app knows when you're indoors or outdoors, which is kind of, the most fundamental first step is getting outside, because most of us rarely go outside. We have data now on kind of over 1,000 beta users, and we're spending 98, 99% of our lives indoors. So getting outside is step one. The other thing the app does is once we know you're outside and you're either walking around an urban neighborhood, a suburban, or you're actually in a wilderness area, we can detect the elements that you're around and give you Nature Dose credits towards a Nature Dose goal, which is a certain amount of nature exposure each week.
I'm still stuck on the, it can tell if you're inside or outside. And is that sort of a proprietary intelligence layer that you've put on top of, say, a Google Maps? I mean, if I look at my location on Google Maps, on occasion, I'm sort of bouncing around between, houses, and I'm in my backyard and I'm not in my backyard. Like, help me understand how accurate your inside or outside is. We can start there.
Yeah, well, I will say that has been one of our greatest engineering challenges. It is incredibly hard to tell whether a user is inside or outside. And so we aggregate many, many different sensors and kind of ontologies, if you will, to make our best guess. And I think we're getting pretty good at detecting it, but there will be occasional errors. So yes, we do look at your location, and we need to know where all the buildings are, obviously, to know if you're inside or out of them. But we can also look at things like satellite signal strength, accelerometer data. We know whether you're oscillating up and down, which means you might be walking, or you're moving really quickly, which means you might be in a car. There's a number of factors that we pull in to make our best guess about whether you're inside or outside. That's not perfect, but I think it's probably the best tool that exists today in estimating outside time alone.
And when you talk about the nature benefits of being outside, I would say it's probably fair to say that most people would understand going for a walk in the woods is a good thing, right? Like, you're walking, you're getting fresh air, you probably higher oxygen levels, less pollution. What about I'm sitting and working in my backyard versus working inside? Like, what, help me understand, how the scoring works in terms of you've got basic outside and then you've got active outside.
Yeah. So what happens is when you're outside, if you're not in a designated wilderness area, like a park or a forest, if you're in a mixed environment, so say you're walking around a suburban neighborhood, then we revert back to our nature score data, right? We look at what is the nature score for your location. So we're examining a radius around your location and trying to understand which elements are near you that have demonstrated basically supporting positive health outcomes. And so if you're in a suburban neighborhood and there's lots of, big mature trees, for example, you're going to get more credits per minute towards your nature dose than if you're walking in, downtown Manhattan, for example. And so it kind of relies on all the work we've done with our nature score algorithms to calculate your nature dose when you're outside.
Did it sound like I was trying to figure out if I would get a good score by having a beer in my backyard?
Well, you would. I could paint a picture really quickly. Aside from like the focus on longevity, there are a ton of biomarkers that people are studying that change profoundly when you go outside. And so we know almost instantaneously certain things are happening to your physiology and your psychology when you get into a natural area. And so we're starting to incorporate more and more of those into how do we give people nature dose credit. Your immune system gets better. And so there's these things called natural killer cells, which kind of float around your body and they attack viruses and bacteria or cancer when it starts. So we see those jump after you go and sit in a park. Your cortisol, which is like a stress hormone, goes down after sitting in a park for 20 minutes. Your your heart rate tends to go down, your blood pressure goes down. So there's all these benefits that we can really almost monitor in real time that improve when you go into a natural area. And so we're trying to capture those in our nature dose calculations as best we can to motivate people to take advantage of them.
And is it on your product roadmap to integrate into health tech? I can connect my Fitbit to my app. Like, is that part of the roadmap, or does that just get too complicated from a technology standpoint?
No, we hope to do exactly that. We actually are already integrating with a therapist platform called Kasana Health. So there's not enough therapists for the amount of kind of mental distress, at least in the US right now.
For sure.
So they're looking for a scalable remote way to treat patients. And Kasana has an app that allows therapists to do that. And one of the elements they'll be building into that platform is our nature dose technology, because they've found when patients get outside, you know, they just are in better moods. Their anxiety goes down, depression goes down. Particularly people with severe mental distress, if they're like in a downward spiral, getting them outside seems to be one of the most effective interventions. So that's one direct healthcare application. But you can also think about if we could get nature dose into other health suites. So if you think about like people wearing an Apple Watch or those new Oura rings or a Fitbit, we'll be able to start correlating time outside with things like sleep quality, heart rate, et cetera.
For sure, yeah.
And get really, really precise connection data around, okay, what are the best ways to interact with nature to improve any outcome that we want to see? And so that is kind of a long-term vision. Our app just launched, and it's not integrated into several of those other platforms yet, but I definitely see that coming down the road.
I have to imagine you are torn in a million different directions in your position, including just wanting to get outside and get like stop working.
Yeah.
What do you see as some of the biggest barriers for your company if you look forward in the next year? I mean, this is new technology, right? It's, you know, you've created a new lexicon, new data sets, this new sort of quantification of being outside. You're building a consumer facing app. You've got a data set that is being utilized by a whole variety of industries. It sounds like incorporating new data as you find it and it becomes relevant, incorporating new kind of technology and devices into a larger ecosystem. Do you have if you could snap your fingers and something could get solved and you feel it would really leapfrog the business? Like what are you trying to solve right now?
Generally, it's public awareness. I think it's kind of the learning curve or the educational curve that we're facing. I mean, the world is so complicated right now. There's so much news. I mean, there's millions of apps in the app store. Just getting people to focus on something and understand it and appreciate it is incredibly difficult. You know, so I think we could obviously spend millions of dollars on a marketing budget and eventually get there. But I think finding a more elegant, streamlined way to just raise public awareness around the connections between nature and health is one of our biggest challenges.
And is there resistance? My mind starts to go to where this platform and products could be potentially, you know, most disruptive. And quite frankly, we have a lot of clients in my business in the healthcare space. And, you know, you think that in a scenario, you could actually have a physician prescribe outdoor time and prescribe that you need to increase your nature dose number from X to Y. And that would actually have the health benefits that a heart medication might, that there's entire industries that are built around providing a pill to solve for what could be solved, it sounds like, if you got out in nature and increased that nature dose a little bit. You know, are you on the radar enough that you're starting to feel like there's resistance from any corners of industry?
I wouldn't say there's resistance, but there's definitely a bit of a conflict in that it's free to get outside, you know, which is what's so beautiful about it for most people, right? There's no side effects, right? But to the extent that you want to charge someone for a healthcare intervention, like to give them drugs, right? Or have them go and see your therapist and sit there for, you know, a few hours every week. You know, what we are suggesting is something that's essentially free and entirely scalable, doesn't require a healthcare professional to monitor it, manage it, et cetera. I mean, it's something you could just take on your own. And so I do think there's a little bit of a rub there between us and the healthcare systems generally, at least, you know, in the US, where it's not a single payer system. It's a bunch of for-profit companies vying for, your budget, which goes towards your health outcomes. And it's funny, we're seeing a lot more interest overseas where there are single payer healthcare systems, where the government is broadly more interested in reducing healthcare costs, not charging people for clinical services of one kind or selling drugs to them of another kind. So I wouldn't say it's resistance, but I mean, it definitely falls on deaf ears for some groups who are just more focused on selling people something that improves their health rather than just telling them, why don't you go for a walk or go to a park?
Are there other folks that you're looking over your shoulder and saying, oh, these guys have a competitive number and they're trying to do something similar and we need to sort of be first to market or establish our number as the gold standard or our quantification kind of methodology? Or are you really sort of charting and creating a market here on your own? What does it look like in terms of, I don't know if competitors is the right word, but I think you know where I'm going.
When you talk about nature score, so again, the mapping side, there's a lot of great data around tree canopies, for example, or you can figure out the park polygons within a city. But there really is no one who has aggregated all of the natural elements in an intelligent fashion like we have. And we've actually got a great reception because, you know, a lot of city planners or even real estate professionals are like, oh, this is great. Like, I've always wanted to tell people what kind of nature is where, but there's so many divergent data sets. This is an elegant way to combine it. So we haven't really run into any competition there per se. And then on the mobile app, I think if we fall into the general health and wellness sector, you know, there's all kinds of elements that people monitor on themselves. You know, as I mentioned, step count or sleeping, or you can track heart rate variability, which is a popular one these days. But no one was really tracking time outside. And we felt like that is one kind of critical element to our health. You got to get off screens, you know, get outdoors, expose yourself to sunlight, you know, meet your neighbors occasionally, that kind of stuff. And so I think even in that realm as well, we're probably the only game in town. If we're successful, I'm sure, you know, the big tech companies will either take a look at us and duplicate what we do or maybe just partner with us.
Well, I was just going to say, as I sit here in Toronto right now in a COVID lockdown and in a snowstorm, getting outside, seeing sunshine and talking to my neighbors sound like pretty fantastic things. On the side of the big tech piece, I mean, one of the things that crossed my mind as you were talking about, you know, the app especially, is the opportunity to kind of bake your functionality into an existing ecosystem versus the other way around, you know, connect Fitbit into you, but more connect the Nature Dose into the health app in the iPhone or into the, I mean, Fitbit's now owned by Google, but then into the sort of Google ecosystem. Is that sort of a possible outcome of the business where this becomes part of a larger dashboard in one of the big kind of tech platforms?
Absolutely. In fact, I mean, for a while now, we've been joking that Nature Dose needs to be the fourth ring on the Apple Watch, right? You know, it's standing, it's steps, it's activity, but time outside is an important one because it's kind of it's not a direct measure of time off screens, but it is a bit of a counter to, you know, the growing tech stress that we all have. And so outside, I think is another good metric that people should be thinking about. So, and I do think, again, it's more elegant to have our measurements in these other health and wellness platforms rather than as a standalone. I don't know that everyone wants to download an app just to measure nature time, but everyone's measuring all these other things, and nature is another very important component that needs to be part of that platform. So I do think ultimately that's a likely outcome for where we end up.
Well, and to your point, there's just been no elegant way to measure nature, right? Like that, I don't think that there are, again, a lot of folks who would say, no, I don't believe that being active and being outside is good for health outcomes, right? I mean, I think fundamentally people can wrap their heads around that. But what does that mean? And how do you track it? And to your point, this is sort of one other data point to force someone to go to another spot discrete from where they track all these other health data points is an extra step. And that integration could be a very elegant way to tie these pieces together. And in some ways, bring a little bit more validity to that number because now it's part of you have a heart rate and no one questions that number. This could be a way to increase exposure and add a bit of sort of credence to that Nature Dose number.
And change behaviors. there's this notion, it's called the Hawthorne effect, is that if someone knows that something's being monitored, they change their behavior accordingly, which is why, you know, you'll often hear someone say, just write down what you eat. I don't care what your diet is, just write down what you eat. And that changes the way you eat just by the fact that you're recording it now. There's a record of it now. It makes you think about, you know, in further depth, like, wow, okay, do I want to write all this stuff down, have, you know that this is being monitored? But the same is true for just simply time outside. I don't think people realize that they're spending 98, 99% of their lives inside, mostly in front of screens. But once they start measuring that and they realize how little time they're actually spending outdoors, that may change. You know, they may then realize, oh, this is something that's important to my health. I'm going to appreciate that and try and obviously get more time outside.
And do you feel like, is it sort of an idea whose time has come? I was thinking that there's a component of it. This wouldn't have been possible without, you know, advanced machine learning, right? It wouldn't be possible without some of those data sets and some of the technology components. But it also might not be of as much relevance if we hadn't just spent the last 2 years, a whole bunch of us, being probably much more inside than we would have otherwise. Like, is there a little bit of a pandemic context here that has an audience perk up a little bit more when you're talking about the platform?
Yeah. And I think about it actually even more of a historical perspective. Yes, the timing for this is becoming more and more critical, right? The pandemic has certainly emphasized how important it is to get outside for, you know, mental health more than anything these days, but also because techno stress is just growing. Everyone's spending more and more time in front of screens. And it just turns out that that's unhealthy. You need to unplug occasionally and just unwind away from technology for a bit. But stepping further back, I mean, if you look at humans from an evolutionary perspective, 99.9% of our history, we were outside all the time. And then since the Industrial Revolution, cities started growing. More and more people are living in cities. In the US, now it's like 4 out of 5 Americans are in cities. We're spending 12 hours a day in front of screens. We're slowly changing the way we interact with the outdoors to just an indoor urban lifestyle in front of screens, which is, from an evolutionary perspective, quite different than what we evolved to kind of experience or behave. Yeah. And so it's the timing in terms of the pandemic is certainly critical, but also I just think we are really, really changing our lifestyle into an indoor urban human, which is just different than how we evolved. And so it's turning out that as we study these kinds of new behaviors and new lifestyles, there's a lot of negative things that come along with that new lifestyle that we need to counteract now. You know, we've kind of gone too far to indoors screen time, and we need to counterbalance to that growing techno stress. And that's what we're hoping NatureDose can provide.
Well, and as we get sort of further and further along, the income disparity grows, health outcomes are, you know, radically different depending on geographic locations and background. And there's a whole bunch of other challenges that feel like they're becoming more of a priority for governments and organizations to start to solve, even though they've been around for a long time. They're a little more front and center. Mm-hmm. And this provides, I think, a different lever as to how you talk about correcting some of those inconsistencies and injustices a bit.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we've had a number of like park managers come to us and say, we just need a bigger budget, right? We have all these individuals, they don't have access to a park, or the parks that are in their neighborhood are run down or just sketchy generally. But if we could turn around and tell people, look, these parks provide this amount of public health benefit, right? They're going to reduce medical costs by X. That might open the purse strings and allow more investment in green infrastructure. And so particularly in those neighborhoods where it's just grossly nature deficient or there aren't any, you know, accessible parks, we're hoping that our data can kind of turn that conversation into one around public health and why it's super important to provide those kind of public goods to those communities.
And has there been a moment or a win that you can look back on in the last 6 months or a year and say, we knew that this would be impactful and meaningful, but look at this decision that was made off of our data, or this change that was made off of our data? Or are you still a little too early to start to see how your data and your platforms influences public policy or urban planning? Is it starting to happen where you're getting that sort of case list where it's, you know, in Seattle they did this, and then in Los Angeles they did that? Is it happening?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple of quick examples. One is we've been working with the Arbor Day Foundation, which is a really large nonprofit that plants millions of trees each year. But a lot of that activity had gone into, you know, non-urban areas, basically like growing forests. But they're using our data now to kind of refocus their mission around serving urban communities that don't have adequate tree canopy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously our data is great for that. And so that was kind of exciting to see that we can help drive more intelligence around that I think very worthy goal of theirs that they're about to undertake. Another is, you know, we've been working with Citigroup. They have a platform called City Builder that helps banks identify, you know, how much of their investment is going into communities of high need. And historically, access to nature wasn't one of the measurements that were included when considering investing in communities of high need. Now that they have our nature score data by community, that's a new element that all of these banks can track and start thinking about as a priority. So that's exciting to see, particularly to the extent that it can drive billions of dollars of investment into certain communities that are nature deficient.
Those are two fantastic examples. My company uses Arbor Data to do our carbon offsets.
Yep.
So what does your organization look like? I get the sense that you're still pretty lean right now. How many people do you have? And what does the evolution of Nature Quant as an organization look like as you look through 2022?
Yeah, we are lean right now. You know, we have a handful of employees and then some engineers, some of which are full-time, some are part-time. And then we've got a number of helpful advisors who are hopping on board, and, you know, graphic designer, we have a few patents that we're filing. So we have some IP professionals, but, we hope to expand in the next year quite materially, bring in specialists in the healthcare arena, bring in specialists in the real estate arena. We are mapping Europe and Canada, as I mentioned. So we just hired someone to help with basically our European operations and translating everything into different languages. So I think we're going to be growing quite rapidly in the next 12 months.
I do love to talk to founders and other entrepreneurs who can say things like, we're in the process of mapping Europe, quite casually as one of their 2022 goals. Like, I'd like to hire a couple more people while you map Europe. That's pretty exciting. And I imagine each one of the geographies that you are then able to get this data set on just opens up exponential opportunity because, you know, every country or every region in Europe is going to have similar needs, nuanced to their economies and their priorities, but similar needs to, you know, what you just discussed around the Citibank and their investments. And is there an excitement or a bit of terror or both as you think about, you know, there's going to be a point where you've got a data set for Canada, the US, and Europe, and that's a lot of opportunity for even a growing team to manage. That's a lot.
It is a lot. And we were definitely nervous about it. I'll say that. You know, but one thing we're trying to do is standardize our processes. And, you know, when we're relying on things like satellite imagery, that's easy to do because an image from space looks the same regardless of which country you're in. But some of the other sub elements of data that we're pulling in are different by region, right? So the air quality measurements you get here might be different than what you get in Canada, for example. But to the extent that we can kind of streamline everything, standardize all of the measurements that we use so that it can be a uniform score globally, I think will be incredibly helpful for research, for scaling our business, but also just to allow kind of an international product to exist that's not, you know, unique or different or based on, you know, different caveats by the data that we're collecting in each local region. So that's our goal, is to be able to create a standard nature score across any region.
Well, I am very excited for what the next year has in store. I'll tell you, just that last 30 seconds has me a little bit overwhelmed with everything that you guys have in play. And I'm excited that Canada's on the roadmap. When I've been playing around a little bit, I've been anxious to be able to track my activity here in Toronto. And it's exciting to hear that that's on the roadmap. I appreciate, with everything that you've got going on, I appreciated you giving us the time today. And I am just as excited at the end of this conversation as I was at the beginning, because this is a pretty fantastic journey that you're on and road that you're going down and set of products that you're developing. And it sounds like, you know, we're really just at the beginning, and it's going to be pretty spectacular to watch what happens.
Well, thanks for saying that, Neil. Yeah, I do feel we're at the beginning. I'm hoping, you know, the concept of a nature dose becomes a household term, right? And people start thinking about nature scores when they think about any given region. So we're just getting started, and I do appreciate you having me on.
I love it. Thanks, Jared.
Thank you.
If you're enjoying what you've heard so far in season two, I encourage you to check out some of our past episodes, but also hit subscribe because we've got some great guests coming up. In the coming weeks, we'll be talking to Karen Hold, who wrote Experiencing Design, The Innovator's Journey. So yes, Karen actually wrote the book on innovation. If you have a suggestion for someone you know who you think should be on the podcast, or if you think you're doing something worthy of being featured, send me an email to neil@brightworks.ca. We'd love to hear your ideas.